With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
AM 640, you have Dr. Wendy Walsh with you. This is the Dr. Wendy Walsh Show, and if you are new to my show, get ready, put your seatbelt on. I specialize in the science of love, the biological, psychological, and the social pieces of love. If you've been here for a while, you know me. I am a soft, warm voice with the stone cold truth. Speaking of which, I got one of these emails today. Wait, before we get into this my little story, I want to say hello to everybody. I'm here in the studio at iHeart with beautiful producer Kayla Austin. Are you there?
Hello, Dr. Wendy. It's lovely to be with you, as always.
Always so wonderful. And you're going to be taking calls later?
My favorite part, of course.
Of course. So if people have questions, you're going to get to talk to producer Kayla and then me. We have David on the board. You with us, David? Nope, he's gone.
Yep, I'm here.
Now, remember, I ramble, so you got to do the countdown in my head. Things happen. Andrew Caravella, we got you in the newsroom?
Yes.
We're all behind the glass. See, we got a computer, two computer screens. I have to, like, pop my head up over to see.
I can see your eyebrows.
They're nice, too. I just had them dyed and waxed, so they're fancy eyebrows today. All right, and also my lovely daughter Jones is sitting here with a headset on, noise canceling, so she can't even hear what's going on. She doesn't care. She's studying for her learner's permit. Jones, are you studying? Are you doing your driver's test? I don't know. Last week we were supposed to be doing that, and then I looked and I saw an Amazon Prime video charge. I think she was watching a video instead. Okay, so I get this email today, and this is very common, and my heart goes out to this wonderful human who has been having a close, intimate online relationship with a woman for more than a year who supposedly is serving, I know you're going to hear this and be like, what? In the U.S. military, in Yemen, and she's a single mother. And the whole reason why she can't Skype with him is because the military only allows her to have a certain amount of Skype time, and she has to use that for her son. And she keeps trying to come visit him for her vacation, but always there are security issues. And now she needs a NATO escort. And so he needs to send her $5,000 so she can come. You know where this is going, right? I did not mince words. I was cruel and unusual punishment with the truth. I simply wrote back, this is a classic romance scam. This is not a real human. This is run by operations. I know he'll say, well, we spoke on the phone a couple times. Yes, they employ women with good American accents to speak on the phone from time to time to get your heart involved, because nothing tricks our brain better than feelings of love. How many of you have walked down the tunnel of love without a flashlight and ended up lonely, sad, with an STD, a baby, broke, right? It happens. These are some of the most important decisions that we will ever make in our life. Our choice of romantic partner and our ability to have healthy relationship skills to maintain a relationship is directly tied to how well your life is going to go. Literally, how much money you'll make, where you're going to live, how many kids you're going to have, how your mental health will be, how your physical health will be. Yes, long-term committed people actually live longer. So when people think that the stuff I do is lightweight, do not be confused. I am not a dating coach. I am not a matchmaker. I am not a sexologist. I have a PhD in clinical psychology. I specialize in attachment theory and the science of love. Stay with me, because this is where you get your news. Now, before we get into it, and we have all kinds of interesting stuff coming up, like, for instance, do you keep a backup mate? You know, somebody in your DMs, somebody in your office that you think, well, if something happened to my partner, maybe there'd be a chance. I've got some news for you, and it's kind of positive. We also have a very special guest coming up in the show who is one of the nation's preeminent, expert witnesses
yes.
in sexual consent in
yes.
court. She was referred to us by one of the biggest researchers at the Kinsey Institute. So she's like a muckamucka lady, like seriously. We're going to talk about what's going on with Trevor Bauer, sexual consent. And also, she also happens to be probably the foremost academic expert in the world on polyamorous families. So we're going to break down a little polyamory. Not that it's for everybody, folks. Wait for it. I'll also be taking your calls. Okay, so what happened this week? This week, a couple things happened. If you are a student of mine at Cal State Channel Islands, welcome back. Wasn't it stuffy in our masks? Yes, it was. And I'm the one who had to talk for all those hours. But it was so wonderful to see your eyeballs, at least, on campus. As you can imagine, both my freshmen and my sophomores have never stepped foot on a college campus before because they are the students of the COVID generation who have never been to school. So it's fun figuring it all out. Oh, and those computers, they've been sitting there dormant for a year and a half. Do you think I could get any computer to work or my slides to go up? I was singing and dancing and doing the soft shoe shuffle. Ay, 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 tech problems. I was worried about the air quality. All those students squished in one room, me there for 6 hours yapping. It's okay. The dean is lovely at that school. All I had to do is raise my hand in one little email, and now we got moved to bigger rooms, which I'm really happy so we can practice some social distancing. And if you have been following me for years, because I've been around for years, you know that I have an almost empty nest. I have one kid left in the nest. I've been a single mother for 15 years. And my youngest one is, my oldest one was one of those ones that you never said to her, is your homework done? I more often said to her, can you please just go get a boyfriend and smoke weed or do something that normal teenagers do? Like, Kayla's cracking up here. Because she just studied. That's all she did.
That's a mom's dream, isn't it?
No, she needed to like have some life. Anyway, at the end of the day, she graduated from Harvard. All good. But then I have the fun one over here, who's supposed to be studying for her driver's ed, who is a non-neurotypical learning difference gal. And tomorrow, can we have a round of applause, everybody? She's starting at Santa Monica College.
Awesome.
Chelsea. This is a big deal. Wait, it gets better. She also got a job. Yes!
Oh, my God!
I know. She's working at the Studio MDR, so you will see her at the desk if you do on that. If you'd like to get on that mega former at the Studio MDR. She'll be at all five locations. I know. It's like my whole world is turning around.
You have to do hashtag daughter goals on social.
Exactly. Hashtag
daughter goals. Tell us your secrets, Dr. Wendy. How'd you do so good?
No, she did. She's doing the work. You know, the thing is this, is that our job as parents, if we do our job right, is to work ourselves out of a job. But along the way, it is not our job to push and prod and tell them who we think they should be or what we need to model being a healthy, good, moral person. We need to create a quiet, healthy environment for them to do their homework or their creativity or whatever it may be. And we need to step back and let them become human beings. That's our job as a parent. It's not about trying to get them to be anything. Anyway, very proud of my Jonesy. And then the other thing that happened this week is my sweet boyfriend Julio went away, as he often does, on business. And I had a big revelation. You know, I should tell you, have you ever heard the quote, we teach best what we most need to learn? I don't remember whose quote that was. Can you look it up, Kayla? I hate to quote people and then not accredit them. Anyway, when I wrote my first book years and years ago called The Boyfriend Test, I opened it up with that quote, fully crediting it, that I don't remember who now. And who was it?
Richard Bach.
Richard Bach. Who's Richard Bach? What the heck?
I'll find out.
He's pretty smart. And at the time, I was in deep in the textbook learning of the science of love, right? This is back in 1998, I think, when my first book came out. And so I was sprouting out to everybody everything I learned. But you know who was listening? My own brain. And then at a certain point, after advising everybody else on the planet, from every friend and colleague to every patient I had in private practice, I started actually taking my own advice. Like it finally sunk in and I started doing what you needed to do to have a healthy relationship. So got a fabulous guy. We just celebrated our 1 year anniversary. Point being, he goes away for the week, as often happens. And I noticed an interesting trend. His attachment anxiety goes up right before he leaves. So there's a whole bunch of who's driving me to the airport? What's going to happen? When am I going to see you? How are we going to talk to each other? Blah, 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 blah. And I can feel this anxiety from him. I'm actually, when he's leaving, I'm pretty cool. I'm chill. I'm like, I can get through the week. I got a bunch of stuff on my to-do list. I'm going to get through it. But here's the revelation. So he comes back last night. I pick him up at the airport at 11 o'clock. This morning, every time he moved, are you getting dressed? Where are you going? Why is your bag there? Where are you going? What are you? Why are you? I'm just taking the trash out. I'm just making sure my bag's near the door for when I do leave. I realize that it is on re-entry that my attachment anxiety goes up a little bit. And all this goes back to my dad being in the Navy when I was a kid. That I always was, when he came back and life was perfect and he was such a great dad when he was there, is I was always worried he was going to leave again. And this is how we make this roadmap for our relationships. Okay, when we come back, I want to continue talking about this. And are you keeping it back up, mate? We need to talk about this. You're listening to the Dr. Wendy Walsh Show on KFI AM 640. We are live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app.
What is love? Baby, don't hurt me. Don't hurt me no more.
KFI AM 640. You have Dr. Wendy Walsh with you. This is the Dr. Wendy Walsh Show. Producer Kayla and I were giggling on the break here because we were listening to the commercial and the number one contender, I guess, in this election. I'm not following it that closely. I don't like to talk about politics, but is apparently Larry Elder, the radio talk show host. And a lot of people don't know this, but back when I was a news reporter at KCOP Channel 13, back in the early 90s, and we would have to sit in news vans for very long periods of time, the camera operator and I, and we'd be on stakeouts or we'd be driving all the way to Pomona or somewhere for a story or Big Bear. And so we would listen to talk radio. And I was in my 20s. I didn't ever imagine that in the future I would be on talk radio. But my favorite thing to do was to call Larry Elder's show and argue with him.
I think that's the funniest thing because that's probably what he's saying all that crazy stuff for. So people can get worked up and call in.
Right. And he would get me worked up and I would call in and he never knew it was me. And I never gave him my name, but I just loved to call and argue. And they always put me on air. Who knew that that would be forecasting, foreshadowing the future? Anyway, I want to say this last thing before we get into you and your backup mate. I know you're thinking about your backup mate right now. I did a little research since my boyfriend went away this week and I felt like so happy when he came back. And I was like, is it actually good for somebody to go away in a relationship? And the answer is yes, that sometimes spending time apart can actually strengthen your relationship. They can sort of, you know, okay, I want you to think of a relationship as a Venn diagram of two circles overlapping. You are one circle, your partner is another circle, and then you overlap where you have your community shared couple life. Now, some people are so fused where they can't remember whose problem is whose that those circles are right on top of each other. Others are too avoidant and they're living like polite roommates in their house and those circles aren't even touching. But if you have that nice little overlap where you get to have your own sense of self, your own autonomy, when your partner goes away, you get to remember who you are. And when they come back, you are that person, the person you brought them in the first dates, the person they fell in love with. So it's really important that we do spend time alone. Now, time apart doesn't mean that you should try to have a long distance relationship or not talk to each other for days and all that. No, it's not about creating anxiety in the relationship. It's about growing a piece of you and finding the time to do that. So spending a few evenings every month, either on your own with a good book or out with some friends, actually will give your relationship the breather that it needs. All right, back to backup mates. So there's this new research. Oh, before I get there, I'm all over the map. Richard Bach, I'm such an idiot. He's the one who wrote Jonathan Livingston Seagull. It was his quote, Kayla, we teach best what we most need to learn.
I love that quote. I'm never going to forget it now.
Exactly. All right. So here's what the research says about backup mates. They are essentially mate insurance. And you arrived on the planet in this lifetime, probably because some of your ancestors, maybe all of them, had backup mates. Now, whether they actually flicked the switch and turned that backup mate into an actual mate is a whole nother thing. But remember, back in our anthropological past, in your entire lifespan, you never laid eyes on more than about 150 humans. And most of them were related to you. So trying to find somebody who is a potential mate, there was no Tinder, folks. You know, no crowded nightclubs, subways, no workplaces full of people. It was your traveling band of relatives, 35 to 40 people max. And every once in a while, you come across another tribe. If they weren't angry and battling you, you would look for a cute hunter in that tribe and all would be good. So you had to sort of keep your eyes open for if it doesn't work out with this one. And when I say it doesn't work out, in our anthropological past, people died all the time, right? Diseases, predatory animals, starvation, lots of stuff happened. We needed backup mates. So this desire and urge to keep an insurance policy on our relationships is real. It lies dormant in our anthropological past and it gets activated in our Instagram DMs. So it's the same thing. So my question is this. The new research says couples who have backup mates actually have lower rates of depression, better mental health in general, and feel more confident and happy about their relationship. You see, if you have no other options, you look really closely at your relationship and try to find what's wrong with it. But if you have other options, you're kind of like, you know what? I'm satisfied with what I have because I know I could go somewhere else if I needed to. So I'm going to stay here out of choice. However, Dr. Wendy wants to weigh in here. There need to be some boundaries with the backup mates. And here are the two rules for your backup mates. Never, ever, 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 ever talk about sex. Never. It's too flirty. No, not with a backup mate. Not with somebody where it could actually happen and be real. Do not bring it up. It's also a boundary violation with your primary partner, right? And the other thing is, you can't complain about your current mate. All right? You can't be like, oh, my wife drives me crazy. My wife drives me crazy. You're so nice. If I was married to you, stop it. Backup mates are colleagues and friends with clear boundaries, but you know in the back of your head, you could transform that if you wanted to. All right, when we come back, I have a very special guest. She is one of the world's preeminent witnesses in court on sexual consent. Yes, let's talk about that Dodger, Trevor Bauer. You are listening to the Dr. Wendy Walsh Show on KFI AM 640. We're live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. KFI AM 640, you have Dr. Wendy Walsh back with you. Okay, we need to talk about L.A. Dodger pitcher Trevor Bauer, who is still sitting on his couch. I spoke inaccurately last week saying that he's losing $185,000 per game. No, they're keeping him on full pay. And the investigation into Bauer's alleged assault is now complete. The Pasadena Police Department have submitted the results of their investigation to the L.A. County District Attorney's Office, who will now determine if the former Cy Young Award winner will be charged. So the question is, will the Dodgers look into a further suspension? Bauer is supposedly sitting on a sofa until the 3rd. If you remember, Bauer has been accused of sexual assault by a woman who tried to obtain, well, she did obtain a temporary restraining order against him in late June. In her initial declaration, the woman said that Bauer choked her unconscious multiple times, sodomized her without her consent, and punched her all over her body over the course of two sexual encounters at his Pasadena, California home. Her injuries did prompt medical attention. So this isn't just about relationship science here, folks. This is where relationship science meets the legal community. So why not bring in the heavy hitter when it comes to legal? Dr. Elizabeth Sheff is one of the foremost academic experts, both on polyamory and also kink, BDSM, consensual non-monogamies. And Dr. Sheff, you spend a lot of time in courtrooms, don't you? Hi, it's Dr. Wendy.
Hi, Dr. Wendy. Thanks so much for having me on.
Well, the first question is, you know, the women of Los Angeles here who love their Dodgers and love their pitcher are really saying, apparently this victim had sent some texts giving some sexual consent. But I'm scratching my head as a woman. I'm like, can you actually give consent to be choked unconscious?
Yes, actually. People do give consent for that, but it is revocable. So just because you talk about it in text doesn't mean that that is set in stone and forevermore this person has the right to choke you unconscious. Especially texting needs to be renegotiated because that is a potential fantasy realm. Sexting is all about fantasy. So just taking something from fantasy and inserting it into real life sexual play without discussing it is a serious screw up. That is not consent. Not even close.
Well, I'm breathing a sigh of relief hearing you speak. So my question is this, like, just as a practical question, if the premise in erotic asphyxiation, or sometimes called breath play, is to reach a point of near consciousness to get that sexual high, how does an outsider, a partner, an other, determine that you're at that point of near consciousness?
Well, very carefully, I would say.
Yeah.
if they're good at it, I would say that they negotiate it first. Like, okay, what kind of signal can you give? So it should not be verbal because people are not going to be able to speak. Sometimes there's literally a tap out where someone taps with their hand. Also,
can they even do that? If they're near unconsciousness, can they even tap with their hand?
They won't usually go that far on purpose. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, people think they can stop and then they can't. Breath play is super dangerous.
Yeah.
People kill themselves accidentally. People kill their lovers accidentally. So there is a safe way to do it. Importantly, not only negotiate it, but carefully use pinchy fingers on the nose and cover the mouth with the palm of the hand rather than squeezing the neck at all, because the neck has some arteries in it that might not bounce right back even when you let go. So the safe way to do breath play is not only play sober and always play consensually, but use a hand on the mouth that you can and nose that you can easily release. That way also you're looking at your partner, you're looking at their face, you're making sure, like, you're watching their eye movements, you're looking at the color of their skin if you've got your hand on their face, ideally.
So I want to remind you that we are talking, having this conversation, and the general public is listening. So my next question is, how common is this? And I know you mentioned it's very, very, very dangerous. And I don't want to, like, start recommending that everyone try it to just suddenly enhance their marital life. How often is this practiced?
You know, it's strikingly common. But generally practiced alone, often associated with shame.
Oh.
But it's really hot for the people who enjoy it. And even ironically, just asphyxia in general is pleasurable for people. Children do what they call the choking game, where they will either spin around until they can't breathe or hold their breath until they pass out or press on their neck. The CDC has, briefs about
guidelines.
Not doing that.
Yeah.
It's not a good idea.
And you know, you just even bringing that
like
up. And Dr. Eli, you just bringing that up brought a wave of PTSD to me because in the seventh grade, I literally remember standing on the schoolyard and watching. They used to, we called it a fainting game. And this girl had her hands on her knees. She was bending over and you breathe really fast, like a whole bunch of times. And then it was a boy's job to suddenly squeeze her tight right around her diaphragm immediately afterwards. And I watched her eyes roll back. Florence Moore, if you're listening, her eyes roll back in her head. And I watched her pass out and I was frozen. I couldn't move. And then I heard him go, "Bah, she's faking." And he just dropped her. And I watched her head bounce off the pavement. It's a slow-mo memory for me. You know those trauma memories when you're 12 years old. And anyway, Florence is well today. She's my Facebook friend. We chat, but it was a big deal because she had a concussion and she was hospitalized, and it was a very big deal. So we must talk to our kids that this is not a game for kids ever, ever, ever.
No, no.
Okay, let me ask you about this to close up the Trevor Bauer thing, because I want to get to polyamory and my own bonding test, okay?
Okay.
What about this victim's statement that she texted a friend later, pictures of her with, you know, two black eyes, a split lip, very beaten up, and her friend said, "Oh, who do I have to kill for this?" And she said, "Well, it was consensual, but he went too far." Now, in a legal court, this text, "but he went too far," does that have any meaning to protect her?
It might, depending on, are you in criminal court or civil court? There's different standards of evidence and different standards of proving case.
Let's say it's criminal court.
Boy, I would say how good's her lawyer?
Yeah.
You know, and unfortunately, it is, because consent is so freaking murky.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
And she's up against a guy who makes $300 million a year and has a dream team of lawyers. That's what's really happening here. Ugh. It's heartbreaking for women to win.
Help me, please, doctor. I'm damaged. There's a pain where there once was a heart.
KFI AM 640, you have Dr. Wendy Walsh with you. This is the Dr. Wendy Walsh Show. My guest is Dr. Elizabeth Sheff, also goes by Dr. Eli, the foremost academic expert on polyamorous families and children worldwide. Her first book, The Polyamorist Next Door, Inside Multiple Partner Relationships and Families. And she's also been an expert witness, relationship coach, and educational consultant. Dr. Sheff, so I took your bonding test that you sent, and where do you think I ended up? Take a guess.
I'm going to say, boy, I also got to say I didn't do any research on you, so this is just off the cuff.
Just by tone
of
voice.
I'm going to say, curious about one-to-one, curious about one-to-many, cautious about many to many, and comfortable with solo.
Well, very close, except not liking one to many at all. So I'm like, I'm like on the Kinsey scale, like so far over. It's like, but you know, my area of interest is attachment theory. And I feel that I spent 7 years in therapy and 7 years in graduate school healing my own anxious attachment style. But I could never, ever be in a polyamorous relationship because I could never suppress or manage, or whatever word you'd like to use for it, sexual jealousy. I couldn't. I could not. Ever. And I'm always amazed. So first of all, let's just go through.
Yeah, polyamory is not for everyone. Oh. I would say consensual non-monogamy in general.
In fact,
why don't we start
there? Right now in our culture, there are a lot of loose terms that all fall under some kind of umbrella that people point to polyamory. And the terms are swingers, the swinging lifestyle, ethical non-monogamy, polyamory. Can you help define each of those and explain how they're very different, right?
Yes, and actually, I would even add to that open relationships, monogamish relationships, and relationship anarchy. I mean, there's this huge kind of range of different ways to have multiple partners. Mm-hmm. And the umbrella category I use is consensual non-monogamy, distinguishing that entire kind of multiple partner thing that's consensual versus cheating, which is not under that umbrella. So consensual non-monogamy covers everything from polygamy, which is multiple partner marriage, to swinging, which is closer to swapping partners, or when a most often heterosexual appearing couple kind of hooks up with other people but then goes home with each other, like the emphasis is on the couple.
Well, speaking
polyamory,
of that, I was I was a guest on somebody's podcast last week who they identify as swingers, and they were a married couple who go on vacations and cruises with other married couples. And I asked them, you know, because they promote the swinger lifestyle, do they have separate partners? And they only engage in foursomes. So they said it's actually very hard for them to find another couple where they're both attracted. I said, well, what happens if, you know, one person's interested in one partner in that couple and the other one's not? He goes, well, we just don't do it then unless we both say, okay. So that really limits your choices.
Right. And sometimes people will have sex with someone they're just not super excited about, but their partner's really excited about, the other half of that couple. They call it taking one for the team.
Oh my goodness. You know what's rising in me. Okay. So the question is, what percentage of humans engage in this kind of behavior? I know we have the widest range of sexual behavior of any primate species.
Right.
What percentage are engaged
in the United States, at least?
Yeah. Let's go with our Western culture.
20%. It knocked my socks off. I did not expect it to be so high.
Wow.
20% of people have had some kind of consensually non-monogamous relationship. So maybe they had a threesome one time, or they have an ongoing, you know, open relationship or whatever.
Oh, wait,
but,
so have
so 20%
had once.
Have tried it.
Yeah, 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 yeah. That's
and
a little different.
5%
than...
have an ongoing consensually non-monogamous relationship, which is actually that 5% is larger than the LGBTQ population combined.
Fascinating.
So it's so many more people than I had anticipated when I started this research in 1996. Mm-hmm. I was thinking, oh, this is a, you know, fairly fringe thing. I never would have thought 1 in 5, 20%. That just shocked me when I read that research.
Can you? They're wrapping
Check
me up
out.
Again.
Check it out. It's Dr. Amy Moores.
They're wrapping me up again, and I want you to stay because this is such an interesting conversation. Can you stay for one more segment?
Or sure.
You're rushing away. Okay. I'm sorry we have to.
No, I'm fine.
Okay, because I really want to get into it. I want to talk about whether the divorce rate is higher or lower with people in polyamorous families. I want to ask you how people know if it's good for them or not. And I've got some thoughts on evolutionary speaking and reproductive advantage as well. You are listening to the Dr. Wendy Walsh Show on KFI AM 640. We're live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.